Mr. Grossmith, 3-1. Where were you born, please?
I was born in Bristol.
Which year was that?
1923.
What did your father do for a living?
My father was a mechanical engineer.
Did you go...
And a country director.
Did you go to school in Bristol?
I did.
How old were you when you finished at school?
I would be 17.
So, war had already started by the time you left school?
That's correct.
Do you remember if you had any reaction to the news that Chamberlain had declared war on Germany?
This is interesting. At the time the war broke out, I was in Christchurch on holiday. And my father was on the other side of the estuary and called across to me and said he thought war had broken out and he would have to get back to his firm to keep an eye on things. And so I went across with him. I left my mother where she was on holiday. My father and I went back home and we heard the broadcast on the wireless together of the outbreak of war. God Save the Queen was played on the wireless. We both stood up. My father was a very patriotic gentleman. We both stood up while God Save the Queen was played on the wireless. That was the announcement that war had broken out.
Did you feel any sense of dismay or excitement?
I couldn't say I felt a sense of dismay. I suppose I wasn't mature enough to do that. Excitement? Well, I suppose that would be nearer the mark, yes.
I think that you joined the Home Guard, or the LDV.
I did join the LDV as soon as opportunity occurred. I had already had some military training at school, and I felt that if I had some contribution, could make some contribution, I would join the LDV until I was old enough to volunteer for the Army.
Which unit of the LDV was it?
It was later described as the 6th South Gloucester Battalion Home Guard. But at the time of the LDV, I can't remember what it was called then.
Where did they meet?
We met in Longwell Green, which is about 5 miles or perhaps 6 miles out of Bristol. Although our activities ranged later on over quite a wide area around Bristol.
What kind of personnel did it have?
Well, as one might expect, it had people of my age and people of my father's generation, some wearing their war ribbons. I was, in due course, appointed a corporal because of my military training, and I had to give instructions and orders to some people twice my age, or more than that. And that was quite an exercise.
How did they take to that?
On the whole, it went down all right. I think we respected each other. They had qualities I hadn't, and I think they thought that perhaps I had something they hadn't.
Did you have arms?
Oh, yes. Not to start with, but in due course, our arms vary. We started off with pickaxes, and followed by shotguns and then rifles. But I had a .45 Webley revolver, which my father had carried in the First World War, and the Home Guard provided me with ammunition for it, and I carried that as an NCO man.
Do you think that the unit would have posed any problems for the Germans if they had invaded?
Quite honestly, no. Of course, can I add here that much of our duty was security duty. I was, for example, posted quite frequently to guard waterworks in the area. We would guard the place all night and keep out any potential saboteurs. And and make sure there was no disturbance there. But if the German army had come, of course, we would have been not flat.
Did you ever have any incidents on guard?
No. I cannot say we did. Not that certainly no hostile incidents. Obviously, a few arguments of one sort or another, and there were a few petty jealousies in the Home Guard. But on the whole, things went all right, and we felt fairly confident.
What did the petty jealousies concern?
We had a local fishmonger, I think it was, who was appointed to command us as a lieutenant. A sergeant was a building contractor and so on, and obviously there were minor tensions, but nothing that disrupted any military discipline.
Was there ever any feeling that there might be a fifth column in the area?
Oh yes, we were very conscious. Not locally, no. Not among the local community, but very conscious of the possibility. And we were told to look out for the possibility that there might be people around either sabotaging installations or seeking information we shouldn't have.
What were you told to look out for specifically?
Well, we weren't given any instructions. We were told to challenge anybody who we didn't recognise and make sure that they proved themselves in bona fide. But apart from that, no, we weren't given much in the way of instructions.
Was there much bombing by the German Air Force in your area whilst you were living there?
There certainly was. Bristol was heavily bombed. And from our observation post in the early days, we could see an enormous cluster of barrage balloons over Bristol. And quite impressive they were. And at night, when I wasn't on duty, I would be in bed at night. And I remember one night lying in bed and hearing these bombs on a stick come in, thump, thump, and gradually getting nearer and then passing by and going a bit further away. And that well put the fear of God into you, to be honest.
What was your address in those days?
In those days, I was about halfway between Bristol and Bath in a place called Willsbridge.
And did Willsbridge actually have much destruction?
No. But there was an old railway tunnel at Willsbridge, and a lot of the local people used to take refuge in that railway tunnel. And my father said, I'm not having any of that, I'd rather be comfortable in my bed and live a normal life, and if things happen, that's too bad, rather than have every night ruined by sleeping in this damp old railway tunnel with a whole load of other people. He wasn't having any of that. So, yes, we heard the bombs. They bombed Bristol, they bombed Bath later too. But we were not ourselves, fortunately, immediately affected.
What did national morale seem to be like in those days of the Blitz and the fall of France and General Baxter the Wall?
I would say that morale, on the whole, was good. We did have a man just up the road who my father suspected of being a Nazi sympathiser, and who predicted that the war would be over in 6 months when it first started. And my father was very suspicious of him. But morale, I would say, was determined, not all that optimistic. We couldn't see light at the end of the tunnel, but we were determined to face it.
So this neighbour thought that the Germans would win in 6 months?
Yes.
Did you know him as well?
I knew him, yes, but not sufficiently to form a judgment on his is political or other such views.
Had he been a black shirt?
No.
How did your time with the LDV come to an end?
Well, the LDV, of course, was renamed by Churchill as the Home Guard. For me, I only left the Home Guard when I was old enough to join the army under a special entry system. For that, we had to sit competitive examinations. I had already sat my what was then called higher certificate at school, and there was this scheme whereby recruits as officers for the three technical corps, that is the Royal Artillery, the Royal Engineers, and the Royal Corps of Signals, could sit an examination, competitive examination it was, for entry into one of those corps, and that special entry included recruit training, followed by a 6 month university course, followed by 6 months officer cadet training unit, and then you were commissioned and you joined your corps. And as soon as I was old enough to take part in that, I did. I sat the examination and I was accepted.
Which places did you do your training in Britain?
My recruit training as a first bit of square bashing and an elementary training we did. It was in Newark-on-Trent with the 3rd Training Battalion Royal Engineers.
And then?
And then we went to the University, some of us went to the University of Cambridge. The rest went to the University of Birmingham. I was included in the Cambridge party. And I went to Selwyn College, Cambridge, in October, with a new term, October 1941.
Why was a university course necessary?
We were technical arms. We, of course, needed, and all engineer officers have stringent training in engineering, and most of them, I would say, are graduates in peacetime. Of course, they go through the Sherman, my son's been through it, university training, and they get themselves an engineering degree. It's considered part of their qualifications to carry out and supervise and design engineering work.
What did the course at Cambridge consist of, as far as you were concerned?
We did engineering drawing, we did surveying. Those are the particular things I remember. We did strength and materials, we had a laboratory training to a degree, but I can't remember the full curriculum, I'm afraid.
How useful was it?
I certainly valued the surveying training. My father, having been an engineer and a very practical engineer too, as well as a company director, had already given me encouragement in the engineering line. So I enjoyed the course. As to whether it was valuable to the Corps of Royal Engineers for emergency commissioned officers during the war, I think that is open to doubt, but it did at least ensure that we all had a certain theoretical background and discipline for the job we were to undertake.
How did you fit in with the other undergraduates?
No problem there. We were, as it were, a party on our own. It isn't as if it was a mixed group of some kind undergoing this training or reading engineering. We did our own thing, so to speak, so the mixing didn't really constitute a problem. Even out of hours, and it didn't have no problem at all.
Now, you went out to India and Burma in 42. Can you tell me how that came about and how it was done, please?
Well, after the university course, we went to Oxford Air Training Unit. We were commissioned in November 42, given some leave for doing that pretty strenuous course, and told to report back to where did we go back? I can't remember, but we were to go back to some meeting point for instructions. I think I went to Halifax on embarkation leave, and we didn't know where we were going. We weren't told where we were to go, and if we had been told, we wouldn't have been able to say anything about it, of course. But we were eventually given instructions to in train for from Halifax to Greenock, I think it is, on the Clyde. And we went there, and then we didn't know where we were going. We just put on a troop ship, kitted out for the tropics. And we didn't know with this kit whether we were destined for the Far East or the Middle East. We got on the ship. And even then we didn't know. We sailed right out past the Azores because the troop ships were under attack by the submarines. We could not go through the Mediterranean. We went around the Cape and put into Durban. And in Durban we were put ashore. Some of us went into transit camp, and the rest of us, including me, were billeted in homes. At a place called Isipingo, not far from Durban, in beautiful conditions. We had opportunities for bathing, we had lovely South African fruit and fare, and we really enjoyed ourselves for 3 weeks. And at that time, I was able to make contact with one of my father's engineers who was putting up in South Africa a mechanical handling plant for the South African Railways. They were constructing equipment for loading coal and iron ore and tippling wagons and so on, and handling all this stuff on the bluff at Durban. And I put an advertisement in the local newspaper in Durban saying that I wanted to see some of Dick Jeffries was his name. And Dick rang me up at the place I was, and we had a look around Durban town. And he didn't know, of course, that I was passing. Nobody knew anything during the war or military movements. So I was able to meet up with him, which was very pleasant. And then we got back on a ship, and even then we didn't know for sure whether we were going up through the Red Sea to the Middle East or whether we were going across the Indian Ocean to India. But I was very fortunate because I didn't fancy the Middle East. And found that at the end of our stay in Durban, we were heading for India, and we went and got out of Bombay, went into transit camp at Kalyan, Bombay, waiting further instructions.
What impression did India make on you on arrival?
Well, as I say, I was relieved that it was India and not not Egypt. But what impression? Let me see. When I got to Kalyan, I was waiting instructions, and we got a chance to go around to the cricket club. The cricket club had a swimming pool, and we felt that it looked to me as if the British in India had a fairly attractive lifestyle, and that's as far as I got. I wasn't in Kalyan that long, and eventually we left Kalyan. I got my posting instructions, and I set on the Indian Railways. They were quite an experience. Went across India, being posted to Ranchi in Bihar, which is on, of course, the other side of India, on the eastern side.
This was December 1942 that you arrived, I think.
I think it was, no, we had Christmas on the ship, on the troop ship. Andy manned the Cape. It took us a little while to get round there. We had Christmas on the troop ship, and it would be 9:43 before I got off at Bombay.
Were there any political disturbances or anti-British disturbances in India whilst you were there?
Not that came to my notice.
Did you ever come across any unfriendly Indians, unfriendly to you as a Britisher?
No, I did not.
Did you, on the contrary, come across any Indians who were pro-British?
Having arrived in Ranchi, some months later, I went on a course at the Eastern Army Bridging School, as it was called, the Royal Engineers Establishment, and of course there were Indian commissioned officers, not only Viceroy's commissioned officers, but King's commissioned officers in the Indian Army, and there was one on this course, who was a captain. At that time, I think it was a certain lieutenant. And I was very impressed with this man. He struck me as being a thoroughly honourable army officer, friendly to the British. I didn't see any sign of friction, jealousy, or difficulty at all. And, well, certainly up to then, I was quite impressed with Indians who were serving what was then, of course, the Empire.
Now, can you tell me how you came to be a Chindit, please?
Yes. When I was serving in Ranchi, we were part of the 70th British Division. And later on, we went to Arakan in support of the forces down there, a miserable place in the monsoon. That's in June 43, absolutely pelting the rain. And then we came back to Bangalore, and I was posted on detachment to a place at Kadur, called Kadur, to prepare a railhead engineer job, and water tanks and so on, and for training exercises. And then, while doing that job, my OC, Major Robinson, came to visit me and said, we've got a new role. The 70th Division is to be reformed, and we are to have a special organisation for operations in Burma. And the work I was on was discontinued, and I had to go back to Bangalore. And then we've all been trained for another training area, and we're told the full details of the organisation. All a second field company, which is my unit, and other centre division brigades were incorporated in this new force, which had been commissioned from some London conference, I think, which Churchill and Wingate. And the Americans participating as well, of course, and we were told that we were to be the special forces.
Were you told what the role was supposed to be?
We were told that we were going to be long-range penetration troops, and we had to train accordingly. And we said about that, which was... operating with mules and pack loads, of course, carrying all our weapons and equipment through jungle areas. Of course, jungle areas in India weren't comparable with those we were to find later in Burma, but they were the nearest we could get at the time. The important thing seemed to be to be ready for anything in those conditions, which were as near as they could get for training, as a training area, to the conditions we could expect in Burma.
Were you told much about the objective of disrupting the Japanese?
In vague terms, yes. We prided ourselves on being able to cope. To carry rations on our back, to carry explosives and tools and equipment and weapons and so on our mules, and be prepared for long marches. And we were prepared for all that. I might mention something which might be of interest, and that is that we had to be reinforced. Wingate decreed, I think it was Wingate who decreed it, that the engineer component of each column should have two officers and other organisational features as well, but two officers. And the result was we didn't have the officers, the engineer officers, in the centre division, and they shipped out a whole lot of officers straight from UK who arrived, well, quite some time after we'd done a great deal of training. And when these officers arrived, they were posted out, and there certainly was a little bit of friction between these chaps who had come straight out from UK to myself and my colleagues who had done all the work, trained all the men, got things the way we wanted it, prepared everything, and cultivated a satisfactory atmosphere and outlook. And then these chaps came in, and as often as not, they were senior to us, and they just took over, you see, without any experience or training at all in the sort of operation which we were preparing for. And that did cause, in my case and others, a little bit of friction. But I hasten to add that in my particular case, although I resented the arrival of this chap who took over from me as a senior officer, I was a junior, in my particular case, in due course, the passage of time, we learned to respect each other.
How did the training go in India as far as your personal experience was concerned?
The training in India was as good, I think, as could have been devised. We were given some ideas which didn't prove practicable in our column when we got to Burma. We were encouraged to have a march before breakfast, as opposed to having a bit of a brew up and a bit of a breakfast before the day's march. And we were taught dispersal drills and so on, not all of which proved to be of value in my column when we got into Burma. But perhaps other columns made use of them, I don't know.
Were there any accidents in the training? I mean, serious accidents?
No. I don't recall any serious accident in my experience.
Did Wingate or any other VIP come round whilst you were doing the training?
Oh, yes. We had a talk from Wingate